This is the Punk News Podcast for the week of March 26th, 2013. All views and opinions expressed therein are those of the persons expressing them and do not necessarily reflect the views of punknews.org. All right, punk fans, welcome to the Punk News Podcast Roundtable. It's me, Brian Yancey, making my triumphant return after I was off last week due to health reasons. I'm here with someone who did not take off due to health reasons, even though she probably should have, Kira Wisnuski. Hi, Kira. And also joining us, managing editor, father to one, but father to really father to all of us at Punk News.
Yeah, really.
Adam White. How's everybody doing tonight?
I'm tired. Let me tell you.
Me too.
It's gonna take a lot of podcast rum to really get me going.
So you're back on the podcast rum. You're still doing that. You haven't killed that bottle yet.
That's wasn't good. On a podcast last week, so I had no reason to drink it.
Oh, okay. So this is like a ritualistic thing now at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
Are you just drinking straight rum, Adam White?
No, actually, it's mixed with ginger ale at the moment.
Okay.
I never know what to
be like. Boo! That is gross.
I never know what to drink rum with because I don't really like rum if I'm not like, you know, in a rum situation like.
Like on a pirate ship?
Like on a pirate ship or like at like a Cuban resort or something.
Yeah.
So this is, I don't even know where this came from. It's like ghost rum. It's just in my house now. It has to be drank.
You should just be drinking mojitos every night.
We were growing our own mint for the purpose of making mojitos for the past few years. So it's just not the season.
Oh, fair. The fair. And then you just need to go get some papaya juice.
That sounds like a lot more work than not. Let me tell you.
Just buying a bottle of ginger ale and mixing the two together. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Buying, it was like in the pantry. Like, I'm glad there was that, or else there would have been like dish soap or something. So.
Gross.
Yeah.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Yeah. That's the show. No, we have lots of, I don't know if I would call them great punk stories. We have lots of punk stories to discuss tonight. The first of which is the demise of My Chemical Romance after 12 years. And while this band wasn't really what I would consider good, I wanted to bring it up because I was kind of surprised at how many people in our community seem to kind of like them and mourn the loss of them. In case you missed it, I'm sure you didn't, but in case this, for some reason, is the first place you're hearing it, My Chemical Romance, not a band anymore. They were together for 12 years. They released four full lengths, I believe. The most recent one was in 2010. It was called something, something, The Fabulous Lives, Danger Days, something. I can't remember the rest. It's a long title. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that and guess that neither one of you were fans of the band, but are you surprised at the like kind of the outpour of sadness and like the kind of feelings, the kind of comments that we got on the story when we posted it? I mean, it was a little surreal for me. I'm curious to hear what y'all are thinking about it at all.
I'm actually not surprised, and I have not yet quite been able to put my finger on what it is because I don't want to say that, you know, I have any kind of opinion on this band one way or another. I don't think I've ever heard them, to tell you the truth. Sure, I've seen like clips of videos and things like that. So like, I know the kind of direction that they were going in, but I think that, like, if you look at the difference between, say, like, My Chemical Romance and, say, Fall Out Boy, in terms of, I don't know, bands that were popular to that certain age bracket, I guess, I kind of got the impression that even if you didn't really like them, My Chemical Romance at least had a direction that they had decided they were going to go in. And, well, sure, it certainly wasn't for me. They did it. And while doing it, they didn't become insufferable dicks.
That's an important aspect of it. Yeah.
Well, it is, right? Because if you think about, like any of the Fall Out Boy people, and they're all like, you know, dating vapid movie stars and being insufferable dicks, right? But you think about like My Chemical Romance, and, you know, while I certainly wasn't listening to their thing, I don't recall ever hearing like the tabloids going on about, is it Gerald?
Gerard. Yeah.
Gerard.
Oh,
okay.
Sorry.
There you go. See, whatever. I don't recall like, you know, seeing his name like dragged around. We're like, oh, Gerard Way is now dating this, you know, celebutante, and he's involved in this or that scandal. Like, they kind of did their thing. If you were into like, I don't know, mildly kind of gothic operatic mall emo, I guess they were your thing. And if you weren't, which I guess is us, then they kind of stayed out of our way, I guess. Like, I don't know. That's as nice as I can be about it. I mean, I don't think they're a band any of us were fans of, but I don't think they went out of their way to be annoying to us. Like, it was a live and let live sort of situation.
So that's a fair assessment.
I mean, that said, for God's sakes, Gerard. Okay.
Gerard.
What I was about to say about him, and actually this is something that,
is a dad, y'all.
Yeah. Sorry. My brain's melted. And this is actually something that Sound Guy Nariman just, sent off to us from behind the curtain there, is that he's become quite the accomplished comic writer. So he has this whole artistic pursuit in life that is not insufferable. And he's pretty good at, and I don't think any of us begrudge him for. So he wrote The Umbrella Academy, and I don't know, he's been hanging out with Grant Morrison, who, if you're a comics person, you know who that is. So, you know, I'd love to read a bunch of comic books from him. I don't necessarily want to hear his band in this situation, but I don't hate him for it. So I don't know. And I think it was probably a lot like that. Like, I guess you could probably be like a My Chemical Romance fan without feeling like you needed to like make it a political cause and get up and defend the fact that you're a My Chemical Romance fan, compared to, say, Fall Out Boy, who are insufferable and therefore you have to get on the defensive.
Yeah, we'll get into them later in the show.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say, sorry, all of a sudden I coughed and now my voice is kind of gone. Okay. So I might not make it this whole podcast, but I will say that I did really love that one song. I think it was called Vampires Will Never Hurt You.
Okay. And it was, yeah, that rings a bell.
Yeah, and I actually put it in the little feature box, the lyric that's like, can you stake my heart? And that was like the bridge, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I thought that song was real great. So I'll say that. at that time in my life, anyway. You know, in college, but aside from that, I think that Adam White, as per usual, made some really good points. Like, I couldn't really tell you too much of like any current My Chemical Romance stuff outside of that one song that I really liked. But yeah, I guess that they're just pretty they're not offensive in any way. So it's like, oh, I'm sorry for people who really like them that they quit, because I actually saw. I know that we didn't post this, so sorry, person, whoever put this in the submissions queue, but somebody put in the submissions queue something about there's like thousands of fans that were signing a petition for them to get back together or something. So there definitely is a fan base there who is obviously not us. So I am sorry to that fan base that this band no longer exists.
Yeah, apparently it has over 14,000 signatures, I think, which is kind of crazy. But Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, you know. No real opinion of this band. I never thought they were that great. Their last record, which I unfortunately heard a lot more than I ever anticipated I would, was kind of, I don't know, it kind of sounded like Def Leppard to me. So I was not into it. One person who was into My Chemical Romance, which might surprise some people, is Fat Mike, who, I'm going to read you a tweet that he sent out this afternoon. He said, quote, "Often people can't tell if I'm sarcastic or sincere. I'm pretty bummed My Chemical Romance broke up. Black Parade is an incredible record," end quote. So he was a fan. He was among the Black Parade, if you will. So, you know, it's unfortunate for the fans of the band, but, you know, they were around for a while. They kind of had their run, and who knows, maybe in 5 years they'll do some sort of lucrative reunion tour of some kind. But on to slightly more serious topics. The Dropkick Murphys are still getting heat from neo-Nazi groups, this time in Australia. So after the band kind of had an incident with a neo-Nazi at a show in New York where Ken Casey kind of, I don't want to say he beat the guy up, but he kind of beat the guy up and shoved him, and you know they have the whole Nazis are not fucking welcome at a Dropkick Murphys show. Well, apparently Australian neo-Nazis have been sending the band's management threatening emails. The band actually tweeted out the email themselves. So it's getting a little hairy. I mean, obviously you can't tell if the email is real or if it's just somebody trying to pull a really sick prank. I personally would be terrified if I had gotten an email like that, but I'm not a tough guy in a punk band, so I don't know. How would y'all feel if this happened to you? Yeah.
I mean, on the one hand, there's part of me that's like, cool, we're pissing off the Nazis now. And I'm reading this story from that perspective. I suppose if I was getting Nazi threats, then I would probably have a slightly different tone about that. But
yeah, that's accurate, I guess.
Everything's different before Nazis are threatening you, right? Although I gotta say, I can't hear like neo-Nazi groups now without picturing like, I don't know, Hydra from Marvel Comics, which was like a neo-Nazi group, but they all wore the same green jumpsuits and chanted together. So,
okay.
You know, I see everything now through completely cartoonish eyes.
All right.
I don't know.
Kira,
what do you think about Nazis?
I mean, I'm not for them. You know, I'm going to go ahead and put them in like the con column. This whole hoopla, like, and I'm sure you guys talked about this last week. Were any of you on the podcast last week? No, you weren't.
This is an all new group. Let's plow through it.
I mean, the whole thing is like a little absurd to me.
Yeah.
And I guess it's like in some ways like context, I guess in my like little bubble of the world, the fact that neo-Nazis are like a thing is probably extremely naive of me to be like, what? They're a thing still? And they're just showing up at Dropkick Murphy shows and like doing the Hitler salute on stage. Like, that is so absurd to me.
Yeah, it doesn't seem real. You're right.
Yeah, and then all this hoopla. It's like, what is even happening? So my real reaction from it is really like kind of like, what the fuck, y'all? What is happening? If the question that you posed, Mr. Yancey, if I ever got an email like this, I don't know what I would do with it. I mean, like if Australian person is listening right now who's a neo-Nazi, and then they send us each a threatening email because we're like, because I just said, like, why do you even exist? And then they send me an email. Like, I'm going to be like, well, I wasn't planning on going to Australia anyway, but thanks for the threat. I don't know.
What does one even do in that situation? I mean, do you alert the authorities? Do you, I don't know, just delete it and forget about it. It's, yeah, it's really strange.
Probably.
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
It's probably the adult thing to do, I would say.
Just delete that shit.
Yeah, just forget about it. Those guys are all talk. They're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully this doesn't actually materialize into anything that's, worse than what they've already been dealing with, because obviously it's something that could potentially turn into a scary situation for everyone involved, except the Nazis, I suppose. I guess they wouldn't be very scared, but yeah.
Yeah, I only hope that this is all just like, you know, tough guy bravado and not anything substantial.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So what else we got on the docket? Queens of the Stone Age have signed to Matador Records, which is kind of wild. Their new album's coming out in June, I believe. And June 25th. And it's their first record since 2007. So they had kind of a long layoff. Of course, they were on a major label for a very long time before this, for virtually all of their career, I believe, going back to like the late 90s. So this is kind of cool. I don't know if you guys are fans of the band. I mean, I know that Songs of the Deaf kind of ruled my life when it came out in like the mid 2000s for a few months. And, it was a good record then. It hasn't aged as well as, some other records that came out around that time. But I mean, it's kind of cool that, you know, they're on the same label as Ceremony and Fucked Up and those bands. So, do you have any sort of anticipation, or are you looking forward to this? What are your feelings on Queens of the Stone Age as an independent band in 2013?
I'm into it, but I think that cryptic bullshit on their website is stupid.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. I would love if bands would enact a no cryptic bullshit policy into all of their doing. But, It's just like shitty marketing. And I say that as a person who markets things for a living. It's just annoying, and it annoys people, and it doesn't really accomplish what they usually set out to accomplish.
I agree, because I'm not being like, yo, Brian, yo, Adam, did you hear that cryptic shit that Queens of the Stone Age put up?
Yeah.
Oh, the mystique is the internet has just killed mystique in anything. Like, we can't. It's really hard to make anyone seriously engaged in cryptic bullshit these days. I'm actually pretty excited about this. I think I, like you, I was a huge Songs of the Deaf fan, and there was a few years when I was in university at the time where, man, I listened to the shit out of that record.
Yeah.
I've heard everything they've done since. None of it grabbed me necessarily like that record. I think that record holds up fairly well. I don't know what you're talking about, but but now if our comment section is to be understood, this new one that's coming out, like Clockwork, it involves the talents of Mr. Grohl again, and
as far as I know, yeah,
it apparently involves some contributions from Nick Oliveri, which is kind of neat. So
Is his contribution bass playing, or is it
just causing petty crimes?
Petty crime and stakeouts with SWAT team members and things
maybe.
Like that.
And you know what? Looking at Wikipedia, because they know more than we do about this, it looks like Mark Lanegan is involved in this one again too, and he was involved in Songs of the Deaf. So,
oh, nice.
Neat. I have high hopes for this. I mean, I don't know if being on Matador means anything, only because I don't think being on any label necessarily means too much these days, because the line between big indie and failing major label is pretty, you know, they're pretty close.
Sure.
So, you know, it's definitely cool to see them on like the band list next to like Fucked Up, and I don't know who else is on Matador. Like, are New Pornographers on Matador still?
Yeah.
Were they ever?
They were. Yeah, I mean, Matador has like a pretty great lineup. Like, Matador, Pavement.
I mean, all these bands aren't going to go tour together, though. That's the thing, right? I mean, that it's not like, you know, like Epitaph in the late 90s or something, where you knew all those bands are just going to end up on some package tour. Like, that's not going to happen. So
it could happen, Adam White. It could happen.
Lots of stuff could happen. this one will not. So yeah, I mean, cool. That's I mean, it's nice to see. You know, it's nice to see these bands that did spend their whole career on a major kind of like land on their feet and at least seemingly gracefully go do something afterwards. So
yeah, I agree.
You know, that's cool. You know, it's probably great for Matador too, which is, you know, that's good.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. I would say it's mutually beneficial. It benefits everybody.
I mean, but Queens has always been kind of like a weird band in terms of credibility and stuff like that. Anyways, and I hate saying credibility. I think someone's going to slap me. But I mean, they were a band with like a really weird dedicated following. I mean, if you go back to like all of the odd material that they would release, which I don't know if it was independent or not, but the odd material that like that Josh and his people would release, all those like Desert Sessions records that they put out.
Yeah,
you know, like there was like a whole culture and mystique about that band and the satellite bands and the satellite acts that they were involved in, that being on a major didn't really play, I don't think, too much into how people saw them in the first place.
Right.
I mean, it definitely probably gained some of the singles from these records, you know, airplay on modern rock radio, but you'd figure kind of like at the same time, Josh is just going to like, you know, go back to doing peyote in the desert or whatever. And that's
going on a vision quest.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, and I don't think the band's fans, you know, really cared too much about the label politics of it anyway. So it's interesting to see them on an indie. I don't think that it's going to make a lot of waves in their circle. Not that I'm
sure.
Really know who their circle is. Who is Queens? Like who is this band's like, I mean, like, we like them, but we can't be their core.
It's
one of the great things about them is that they have pretty, like, they're pretty mass appeal.
Yeah, but also like very unique in a lot of ways and kind of weird. But for some reason, like, metalheads like them, punks like them, people who listen to the radio like them. You know?
Mass appeal.
Yep. Cool.
All right.
All right, let's do a song. We'll do my song first because I'm here and John Flynn is not. This album actually came out last year and I missed it, but I got to discover it thanks to Bandcamp and their really great Discover feature, which if you haven't checked that out yet and you enjoy buying music on Bandcamp, you should definitely do that because it's a great resource. Anyway, the name of this band is Royal Headache. They're from Sydney, Australia. And this is from their self-titled record, which came out last year. The record is, it's really good. If I had to kind of pigeonhole it and describe it in one sentence, I would call it the Marked Men meet Motown, as in they're kind of like a garage pop punk band, but the singer is really talented and he has a great voice. And it's very soulful in that respect. And I bought this record on Saturday and I've listened to it probably 50 times since I bought it. So definitely check it out. It's on their Bandcamp. It's like $7 and it's royalheadache.bandcamp.com. Again, the name of the band is Royal Headache. This song is called Down the Lane.
Oh,
Ahoy, ahoy, punk fans. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast Roundtable. Once again, I'm Brian. I'm here with Adam and Kira. Let's talk a little Black Flag. So Black Flag, which is, as I'm sure you know by now, the Greg Ginn, Ron Reyes version, not to be confused with Flag, which features Keith Morris and Bill Stevenson and Chuck Dukowski and others. So they are back, and they're doing a fairly extensive tour of Europe and the U.S. They have a few festival dates. Or I guess these are club dates, actually. They have a few club dates in Europe in mid-May, and then they're going to do a North American tour that kicks off in Austin, Texas on May 23rd and kind of circles the U.S. and with a couple of dates in Canada, maybe just one date in Canada. Yeah, just one. And then in August, they're going to go back to Europe and play festivals. So, I mean, I feel like we've talked about this a lot on the show. This is not something I'm particularly interested in seeing. I don't think that Greg Ginn is infallible because I'm not John Gentile. So I will not be checking this out. Yeah, it's not for me. Based on what I've heard and the stuff I've both heard and seen in terms of like video content from the reunion shows in 2003, I don't think so. I don't know. I will check out the record though. That's something I'm kind of intrigued weirdly to hear.
Oh, I don't even know what we're supposed to make of this.
Yeah. It just reeks of like a cash grab to me, which is fine, but I don't know.
It doesn't
seem like it's in line with what Black Flag was about back in those days, you know?
I have actually no interest in seeing these shows at all. It's definitely one of those bands that I don't think should ever play together again, as much as whatever that sounds.
I mean, at the same time, and I feel like, I don't know why it feels like we have to take sides in this necessarily, but the Flag reunion doesn't seem to bother me. But this does. And I know it's Greg's band. He's fully within his right to do whatever the fuck he wants, but they could do this without it being called Black Flag. you know, and I'm not trying to be facetious or anything about it. I mean, that name, I think I don't think there's many others in punk rock that kind of holds, I think, that level of like just gut emotional reaction with people. So
sure.
And I think this is what Kira was getting at. Like, they're not a band that needs to get back together and play. Mm-hmm. Like, and these guys do all the time get together in some capacity in various combinations and play Black Flag songs to Black Flag fans, and that's okay. You just don't call it Black Flag. It's like you call it Black Flag, it's like you know, in that case you have to reopen the chapter on a band that the book should be closed on. It's like, you know, it's like you go to the Wikipedia page, and instead of there being Black Flag broke up in X and since then all the members have done da da da, it's like, no, now there's going to be like a reunion in 2003. The band got, and then, you know, now it's a chapter. And I think that's what bugs people about this, is that they don't need another chapter. They can just, you know, if they want to be nostalgic and go have fun, then be nostalgic and go have fun. But don't make it like a new chapter in this band's legacy. Because, I mean, you go to, you know, blackflagofficial.com, right? And you click on discography. And while, yes, it's basically just an online store for SST, you know, there's the full Black Flag discography featuring, you know, anyone who has ever played in Black Flag. And then you click tour, and, well, there's a wholly different group of people playing tour. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
yeah, yeah.
It creates a continuity that I don't feel like it needs to. So, blah. I say blah.
Yeah.
Blah, indeed. Yeah. So let me ask y'all something. What did you do instead of listening to the new Fall Out Boy song?
Oh, boo! I listened to it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. Wow. All right. So,
you're pretty professional.
Real talk. I am what could be considered a closet Fallout Boy fan.
Oh.
I do not ever identify as a Fallout Boy fan in any sort of public forum.
Until right now, yes.
I actually recall very clearly, again, while living in Miami, that I told my friend Patrick that I was a closet Fallout Boy fan while we were listening to that second album. It was like when that second album came out.
Yeah.
I think that's the one with Dance Dance on it, right? Isn't that their second album?
From Under the Cork Tree.
Yes, that one.
Can't believe and I know that.
And then like a day later, he said to me, he's like, I understand why now you consider yourself, like why you're a closet fan. And I think that it is to some points that Adam was perhaps touching on earlier when we were talking about My Chemical Romance and their fans being slightly insufferable.
Sure.
So I try not to identify with that so much. And
why would any rational person want to?
But yeah, like one of my favorite Valentine's Day ever was seeing Fall Out Boy at the Metro in Chicago with my friend Danny. That was like the best thing. But let's talk about this video. Did you watch it? Either of you?
No. Absolutely not.
Adam?
Well, all right. So I turned on the video. And then at the same time as I turned on the video, I was... sometimes when there isn't a lot of fresh produce in season, you'll go and you'll buy whatever happens to be the quote-unquote fresh produce of the time. And in this case, it was a huge cabbage. I don't really know what to do with a huge cabbage. It's not really part of my normal cooking repertoire. So I shredded it up and I thought to myself, well, I don't really have enough time to make this cabbage into a slaw because that usually takes some time for it to, like, you know, to get all nice and slawy. So what do I do with this cabbage really as far as dinner was concerned? And I thought, well, I guess I could shred it up or dice it and then fry it with something. And this whole experiment in cabbage happened while the Fall Out Boy video was apparently playing on my laptop. So I caught like 3 or 4 glimpses of it while I was cooking this cabbage. So
all
no.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, then I will be the leading expert on this roundtable about this particular video. And I will say, as a closet Fall Out Boy fan, that this video is shit. It is not good, and I'm a little disappointed about it. There was like definitely like this part inside of me that was like, I hope it's good. I hope that even if the song sucks, the video is interesting, or vice versa, right? But no, like, just I am disappointed all over. There's violence that doesn't make any sense, like cliched hot girls dressed up in bondage, like I don't know. It's all
really
silly. Yikes. Well, it's like, yeah, it's like this one girl, like she like licks the back of like a hack knife thing. And it's like, really? Okay. Cool.
What is this?
The 8 seconds of the video I saw was one of the guys, I don't know, chest tattoo was. Yeah. So chest tattoo V-neck was walking with intent. And then there was like an osprey coming. And then that's all. So
yeah, so the part that you missed, Adam White, was when Pete Wentz, everyone's favorite, right? He puts on one of those like I have a bird of prey gloves on, and then the osprey just like comes and flies onto his arm and then flies off his arm.
That doesn't make any sense.
That happened in the video. You missed that one.
Oh, the song is called The Phoenix. That's probably why. I get it now. Okay.
Which an osprey is not.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure an osprey is easier to obtain for a video shoot than a phoenix would be.
These guys are supposed to save rock and roll. They can't get a full fucking fire in the video.
I don't know.
I'm just saying this is Bush League shit. It's like where you gotta, you know, get some CG on that. They got the money.
Yeah, I don't know.
I still have What's the phrase that you used to use, Yancey, that I liked? Something optimist, hopeful optimism, something. I'm hopefully optimistic. Is that
cautiously optimistic?
Cautiously optimistic. That's the phrase you used to say. I am cautiously optimistic about this album.
Okay.
Despite this terrible, terrible song and video. And cover art that was probably talked about last week.
Yeah. Even if it wasn't talked about last week, we don't need to talk about it this week. It's not worth discussing.
Nope. So still cautiously optimistic.
Fair. What is worth discussing, how about that segue, is the new Alkaline Trio record, My Shame Is True, which is coming out next week on Epitaph. I assume y'all listen to it. I don't want to like pull a cool guy alert, but I've had the record for a couple of weeks and I'm going to review it for the site. So I don't want to like dispel too much opinion on it, but I will say that I really like it a lot. And I think it's a very solid, latter era trio record, but I'm curious to hear what, your thoughts are on it.
I'm real excited about it. I think it sounds great.
Yep.
Sounds great. Good job, guys. Way to be.
Yeah, it's like to me, it sounds like, I don't know, like when This Addiction came out, it felt like a step backwards in a lot of ways. And that, you know, they were on a major label. They released that record, Agony and Irony, which I think is a really good record. I think it's better than a lot of people remember or give credit for. And
that album.
Yeah. And, you know, some of their older fans kind of didn't like it or, you know, rebelled against it or whatever happened. You know, they kind of retreated back to the indie world label. They went back to the basement, as it were. And, you know, they went to Chicago. They recorded This Addiction with Matt Allison, who produced all their earlier records and that kind of thing. And it just didn't resonate because it's not what the band had been doing for a solid 10 years before that. So it felt like hacky to me. Like, you know, these songs, they wrote those songs specifically to sound like old Alkaline Trio songs. And they just can't write those songs anymore. I mean, you know, that was like a very time and place thing for a lot of people, themselves included. So when I heard this record, I got really excited because, like, you know, the hooks are great. The melodies are awesome. It sounds amazing. Like the production on it is awesome. It sounds like the proper follow-up to that major label record where it's well thought out. You know, like I said, the songs are great. And yeah, I'm really excited about it. I like it a lot more than I thought I would, quite honestly.
I agree with that. I agree with pretty much all of that. I really love the first half of Agony and Irony. I didn't give too many fucks at all about This Addiction. And what I've heard of this album, I'm like real into it and like pretty excited about it. Adam?
Oh, can I have like the part where I say that I have no reference point to both the trio like recorded so I can just play it and then people can fast forward through it?
Because yeah, I think we have.
I mean, it's got to be on like every third fucking podcast that we've done. You know what? This was probably the first trio record that I actually listened to in its entirety. Now, again, it was also listening to while I was cooking cabbage. So, but that said, I really, really like the first song on this record, like a lot.
Yeah.
Like the She Lied to the FBI, I think. That is super fun. I enjoy it. The rest of the record's not quite like that. It tries to get, I don't know, I guess it gets into that kind of moody, serious, emotional stuff that trio fans like, but whatever, you guys suck. I like the Lied to the FBI song. So, you know, it has made me want to go back and re-listen to this thing so to figure out what else I like on there. So this may very well be the first Alkaline Trio record that becomes one that I listen to, which is weird because then, if you think about it, it could become the gateway record to further Alkaline Trio records that I've never heard that I could then go hear. And then in like 5 years, I'll be all like pissy on the internet about how like whatever they're doing isn't as good as God Damn It. And you know, I could be one of those guys that pretends I was there at the beginning and I'm offended. And really, that's what I want to be.
All right. I feel like that's unlikely, but not impossible.
No, it'd be like 15-year-olds arguing over Jawbreaker. It'd be great.
Aww.
I'm sorry, 15-year-olds.
I don't think there are actually any 15-year-old Jawbreaker fans. I think they're all.
No, I would disagree with you, Brian Yancey.
All those kids are into Skrillex now, aren't they?
No. I would say that if Jawbreaker ever did a reunion, you would be surprised at how many young people are there. I would say that there is a fair amount of 15-year-old fans.
Okay. All right.
I feel like they're kind of an intro to punk kind of band now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's fair.
Like, if somebody's older brother, if you had, like, a younger brother who was 15 and you were making them a punk mix, you would probably, you know.
Is that still a thing, though? Does that still happen? Do siblings still do that in 2013?
In my mind, they do. And in my mind, Brian Yancey, you are going to make a mixtape for your fictional younger brother who's 15, and you're going to put some Dear You on there, and they're going to love it.
I mean, I would, but I also would not be surprised one bit if my fictional 15-year-old brother did not give one fuck about the mix that I so kindly compiled for him and simply, I don't know, threw it away or...
No, that's just a phase.
Toss it on the driveway and peed on it or something. I don't know what kids do these days, but yeah.
Peeing on things.
Yeah, fucking kids. Not listening to their Jawbreaker and just peeing on the record instead.
Kids these days, y'all.
On that note, it is time to end it. We have a song that John Flynn will present. And then I will be back to wrap up the show. So stick around.
Hey, this is editor John Flynn, and I'm back with a new song for you. This week, I've got a track from New Hampshire's Poison Ivy League. The band just finished recording a new record, and this song is hot off the mixing board. It's called Wayside, and I hope you enjoy it.
that will do it for the Punk News Podcast this week. Thanks to Adam and Kira for joining me on the show as always. Thanks to Darren, our producer, for making us sound far more professional than we ever deserve to sound. Thanks to all the bands involved for providing music, etc. Thanks to Scotty at Death to False Hope Records for the theme music. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Last.fm, all of your favorite social networks. And send us an email, podcast@punknews.org. You can send us feedback that way, or you can send us feedback, via the comments section on the site at punknews.org. So we'll be back next week. Should be a good one. First show of April. And we hope you will tune in. Until then, this has been the Punk News Podcast for the week of March 26th, 2013.